We're just waiting on Commissioner Saltzman. Do we have special guests here today? Who's in the back row there? Where are you from? Oh, I know where you're from. Hi, how are you?
Portland Urban Planning Leadership.
Great. We'll expose you to a little bit of local democracy today. City Council will come to order. It is Thursday. This is 2 p.m., July 9th. Carla, please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Adams?
Here. I'm taking chair's prerogative to, before we get into the 2 p.m. time certain on improvements to the Public Works Development Review and Permitting Services, just minutes ago, reached agreement on terms for bringing Major League Soccer to the city of Portland, and we're going to get a presentation on this. I'd ask that Ken Russ come forward with Skip Newberry and Ty Kovach and Eric Johansson. Ask that Ken walk through the proposed term sheet, and then we've got the other three certified smart people in addition to Ken to answer any questions from the council. There is no council action on this today, but rather, given that we do have soccer-related issues later on in the agenda, we wanted to air this out. So, Mr. Rust.
Thank you, Mayor. For the record, I'm Ken Rust, the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Portland. Members of the council, we are before you this afternoon to discuss, as the mayor said, a recently completed acceptance of a term sheet for the Major League Soccer project that we've been working on for several months. I think there are some important differences that we want to walk through and make sure that you're aware of that. One is that the project does represent a decoupling of the baseball and soccer issues that had been previously before you. And it also results in a scaling back of some of the project elements to fit within a budget that we think is workable and doable at this time. Has a total project cost of $31 million that, under the term sheet that we've reached agreement with, would be funded as follows. There would be a capitalized rent and user fee payment, basically the rent and the user fee that we would otherwise receive according to the pro forma projections from years 8 through 25 of the projection period would be contributed to the project in an upfront capitalized payment by Peregrine. There would be a cash payment by Peregrine of $8 million. The Spectator Fund itself would have a total of $11.2 million worth of bonds issued by it, and a portion of that, that bond issue that we will be issuing back by Spectator Fund revenues represents revenues also that will be guaranteed through years 1 through 7 by Peregrine as part of the term sheet agreement. One of the things that we have done in contributing or working on this particular piece of the financing package is to close a funding gap is that we've looked closely at the capital requirements of the Spectator Facilities Fund and have determined that with a lot of the discussion that's been in place about the future of the Memorial Coliseum, we believe that we can scale back some of the planned contributions, understanding that that does take on a little bit of capital risk for the fund, but we have some other tools that we think will be available over time to manage those capital liabilities and are confident that's a risk that is known to us and one that we can manage, and as a result, one that we can sign off on in terms of a funding arrangement that has $11.2 million from the Spectator Facilities Fund. The final component is about $700,000 of city-related fees and other soft costs that will be assumed by the city. So the total funding plan is $31 million. And one of the benefits of this to the city is that we have a significant portion of this which is guaranteed either in an upfront payment or through a guarantee by the Paulson family to be negotiated. We also have a sharing of upside, so if revenues exceed projections, the user fee that we would collect on those increased tickets sold above our pro forma would be received by the city. So we share in the upside, and certainly Peregrine is incented to produce upside so that it works towards their business bottom line. And we do have a provision if the guarantee revenues are drawn upon that there would be some sharing of future upside revenues that would allow Peregrine to recover those costs if they were ever called upon to make good on the guarantee to the city. So with that, it results in us actually being able to have a funded plan that would produce the $31 million of improvements. A lot of work still needs to be done to draft a final agreement and to actually execute the financings. But based on where we're at today and the course of these negotiations, it's something that I can sign off on.
And I apologize to my colleagues on council. Carla, I need you to read items 970, the titles for 970, 987, and 988 in order for us to have this discussion. I apologize.
970, amend legal services agreement with Ball Janik LLP for outside counsel. 987, adopt findings and authorize an exemption to the competitive bidding process for development of an MLS stadium pursuant to ORS 279C.330 and City Code Section 5.34810 and 5.34820. Item 987, authorize a sole source acquisition and execution of a contract with Peregrine Sports LLC for pre-development agreement and operating agreement for Major League Soccer stadiums.
So my apologies. Ken, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, that is the summary of the term sheet agreement.
Conversation, questions from council? Commissioner Fritz.
Could you explain again a bit about the $11.2 million and its effect on the Coliseum? I didn't quite follow that piece.
The bonds issued by the Spectator Facilities Fund are based on the revenues that we'll receive from the Major League Soccer proposal and a reduction in expenses that we otherwise have scheduled, those expenses being monies that would be spent on improvements, planned improvements, as needed at the Memorial Coliseum. Currently, we are carrying in the Spectator Fund about $500,000 for improvements per year to be determined, but we don't have a schedule of improvements per se. And what this proposal would do is take $300,000 of that and use it to help fund the improvements at PG Park for Major League Soccer. The issue that we would have then is the management of that, the additional improvements at the Coliseum if needed. We know that there's a lot of discussion now about reuse of the Coliseum. We also know that beyond years 2017, when the Spectator Fund bonds begin to be retired, that we have capacity, if necessary, to fund Coliseum improvements at that point in time if there are improvements needed. And we will have a fully funded capital reserve during that time period as well to call on if necessary. So while it does represent a decrease in planned contributions to the reserve fund, given the other tools that we have in place in the management of the Spectator Facilities Fund, I feel comfortable that that's a risk that the city can manage.
So we currently give $500,000 a year from the Spectator Fund to fund future improvements at Memorial Coliseum, and that'll decrease to $200,000?
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'd like to just quickly add on that point, in every iteration of the previous deals that have been proposed on this, the proposal had included the use of monies coming from the existing Spectators capital reserve between $1.5 million and $2 million, depending on which iteration of the deal. And this proposal keeps the capital reserve as it stands today and doesn't use 1 cent of that for this purpose. So although there is a ongoing reduction in some of the monies going towards capital improvements, the one that is growing and designed to help counterbalance that is left intact.
And we're about to, soon we'll be announcing a process for the Rose Quarter, a public process for considering the future of the Rose Quarter. So this does not, just to be clear, this does not predetermine any future for Memorial Coliseum.
No.
It can stay there. It can whatever.
Our assumption is that we'll continue to stay there at this point in time.
Right. That's my assumption, too. Let me just go through something. So just to also be clear, and we have resized the MLS at PG Park professional soccer deal. We've resized the project to match resources available. Is that correct?
Correct.
And this does not involve any tax increment financing. And the general fund, the risk is allayed from the general fund.
Correct.
And basically the funds for this come from the private sector partner and the proceeds from fees derived from spectators at sports venues.
Correct.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask.
That's called being the witness.
Yeah.
I did my best impersonation of a lawyer.
So I just want to make sure that, and the renovation of the city-owned facility will meet LEED Silver for existing buildings operation maintenance standard. You can say yes.
I could, but I'm not sure if that's what the answer is.
That is the city policy for major renovations of city-owned facilities, that they must meet LEED Silver, the existing buildings operations and maintenance standard.
I would defer that to one of the projects.
The project will comply with city policies, including that one.
And there's money assumed in the term sheet, $187,000, if I remember correctly, to provide for attainment of that goal.
So that was a yes by Ty Kovach.
Okay. All right.
One additional item that wasn't covered in the overview was the cost overrun liability for the city. In the event the cost of the project exceeds $31 million, the city would, as consideration for that, extend the term of the lease in years 26 until we reach the point that the present value of that portion of the lease agreement equals $1 million. So that is the maximum contribution the city would end up making to this project.
Which means that when we build the project, the city has no additional cost obligation. If it does exceed $31 million, we would repay that, but only in years 26, 7, or 8, in an amount that would present value to today equal to that $1 million. But we wouldn't write that check for quite a while.
What would we use to pay that money?
That would be the rents and user fees received in those years 26, 7, or 8, or whatever comes back to a present value equivalent today of $1 million or whatever that.
What would be used to pay the bill today?
Peregrine.
The other thing I guess I needed to be clear is that we are not taking money that is currently going to any other city service.
Correct.
Okay. So a couple questions, if I could. In one of the things that were taken up today, there's some authorization to take $2.5 million out of Spectator Facility Fund and put it into the development deal. How does this affect that?
That's the part Ty was explaining.
Sorry, I was trying to fix the microphone.
So in one of the ordinances we're taking up today, there's a reference to $2.5 million coming out of the Spectators Facility Fund.
That.
I think there's some money that could be used, for example, we're thinking of using for the demolition of Memorial Coliseum at one point.
The reserve.
So what happens to that money in light of this deal?
The way we're structuring it now is there's no draw on the reserves. There's no cash contribution of reserves from the Spectator Facilities Fund. All of it will be financed based on the soccer revenues that are part of the pro forma, and also with the cost savings, if you will, from reducing the capital contribution to the ongoing annual reserves.
It sounds like there'll be an amendment then to what's before us today.
Yeah.
So that,
correct.
The one caveat there is in the pre-development agreement, if the deal were to fall through, say, September, October, we would split the liabilities of whatever was accrued between points that are expressly outlined in the agreement, and the source of the repayment would be from that fund under the current moment. But assuming the project goes forward, the Spectator reserve will be untouched.
So, Ken, you said something very important earlier. You said that you could sign off on this, which is often what we do here. We ask you if you can live with it, because you're our go-to guy in assessing risk. And I believe that was even a condition of something Mr. Saltzman put out once upon a time. So taking that one step further, what's the very worst case scenario for the city under this financing plan?
Hey, let me imagine one.
I've thought about the NBA going into a lockout, but that would only affect the indebtedness that's secured against the tax on Blazer tickets. This portion is covered by Peregrine,
we have reserves for.
Right. So, I mean, the bonds associated with this financing are really based on the guaranteed revenues, and it's important to note guaranteed, and the reduction in the contributions to the capital improvement fund. So those, so we feel pretty comfortable that there's nothing that's going to put those at risk. You talk about the Rose Garden in general, different deal, and we have always anticipated that potential problem. We experienced it early on. That's why we have an operating reserve that covers the loss of the Trailblazers operation for an entire year. That's sort of the doomsday scenario for us, but we know that that could happen. So we feel that even if that worst case event were to happen, we'd be fine for an extended period of time. And the only other thing that could happen is if you had a major capital need at the Coliseum during kind of this intervening time period where we're not able to fund additional monies into the capital reserve, because we do resume capital contributions later on in the pro forma. That's what we have to manage around, and we have a reserve of $2+ million to work with, and there are some other tools that we think might be available to us over time that would help mitigate that as well. So I just don't see a scenario where we can't manage our way around the known business risks that we're assuming with this transaction and the one that we have.
So one other question. I know that Ty is going to go from this process to a job on Wall Street because he now understands the intricacies of high finance. But for the mortals in here, can you tell us what exactly does it mean to capitalize the rent payment, and how does it affect the cash flow
We have a pro forma projection, which simply means we've developed our best guess and with our experts, with the Peregrine Group, at what projection of attendance will be at events at the stadium. That translates into a revenue projection. It translates into a ticket tax. We also have a schedule of rent that increases each year. And between years 8 and 25, we're scheduled, if all those estimates prove true, to receive that money over time. What's happening instead is that we're going to be given a lump sum amount in year one that's the equivalent of all of that money that would otherwise be received between years 8 and 25. And there's a financial math, you know, process that's used to bring to the present those future values. It's a discounting mechanism based on an assumed interest rate that we've discussed with Peregrine that we're comfortable with that represents a fair interest rate to bring back those future cash flows to the present. It's a very common and well-understood financial principle that we're using here, and frankly simplifies the transaction because in earlier versions of the negotiations, all those payments were guaranteed by Peregrine, and the city would issue yet more bonds based on that guarantee. Right now, what's happening is that we're reducing the amount of bonds we would otherwise issue, which takes the risk of being able to sell those bonds and some of the other issues that we've discussed with you previously off the table by having a lump sum payment made at the start. So in many ways, it cleans up the transactions from the city.
Mayor, that explanation, just in short, is they prepay the rent.
They prepay the rent. If I can beg your indulgence, Mayor,
sure.
One other
Please
question. I'm trying to figure out, again, how does this financing arrangement impact, if any, or what is the impact, if any, of this financing arrangement on our current indebtedness on the existing bonds at PG Park?
I don't know that it has any impact on the existing indebtedness. The revenues that we're receiving from this particular transaction will serve the indebtedness that we're creating. The current indebtedness is paid for from the VDI revenues and Spectator Facility Fund revenues in general, and nothing there has changed in terms of the ability to repay that obligation.
And those revenues are not dependent in any way whether soccer is successful and there's any income stream off of those tickets.
It is dependent.
Which set of bonds?
On the existing bonds.
Right. The existing bonds are also paid from the revenues of the Spectator Fund, which include then the PG Park related revenues. So the payment of that outstanding debt is dependent upon having a successful franchise.
A portion of that, though, is also paid by the VDI.
By the VDI, yeah. It's about a 50-50
by the what?
Split.
The Visitor Development Initiative, that it's about half of the debt, you said?
Correct.
Is paid for by hotel motel taxes, and the other half comes from the operations of the facility itself.
But again, the revenue that we depend upon for the period year 1 through 7 is guaranteed by the Paulson family. And so if the success or failure of the franchise is certainly our ideal circumstance, but if the revenues don't meet the projections in the pro forma, then the Paulson family is responsible to make up the difference. And so for our part, the risk of of the situation is mitigated by that dynamic, and therefore should we should be able to depend upon those revenues to service the debt in the fund.
And so does that mean that our, again, in terms of our worst-case scenario, it would be in years 8 and later if for somehow Major League Soccer failed and we weren't able to have a some kind of income stream to cover the existing, we wouldn't have that revenue to cover the existing.
We actually have the cash up front.
The difference between this deal and, for instance, the original deal is in years 8 through 25, rather than a guarantee, we get the actual money. It is the best possible guarantee we can have because we actually will at some point have the money in our hands and not have to worry about the performance of the thing. The only thing the city has in its interest relative to the performance of the franchise and the attendance is if it exceeds the projections in the existing pro forma, we get the upside.
I think if soccer does well, we will do better in terms of paying off existing obligations. If soccer doesn't do as well as projected, it won't hurt our ability to make the repayment because the repayment's based on VDI and spectator fund, and these new obligations are all covered by the guaranteed revenues or the upfront payments.
And my last question is, could you remind me, Ken, under the current arrangement with Mr. Paulson, when could he, as of right, take USL and minor league and baseball somewhere else if he chose? When would his existing contractual obligation end to use PG Park in any event?
I think it's when our current lease agreement expires, and I can't remember the 2010. Yeah.
So in 2010, if he chose, he could take both teams somewhere else, or fold both teams, or whatever in terms of our current.
Or renegotiate the existing terms under which he operates at the PG Park.
Okay. Thank you,
Commissioner Fritz.
So how much do we get in spectator fund every year?
It's a more complicated question to answer than you think. The revenues from the Rose Quarter, including user fees, parking fees, rental income, and so forth, are a little over $5 million currently. We do have expenses that we pay against that, including debt service and operating expenses. Projected revenues from PG Park are in the range of $1.4 million, rising up to $1.7 million between now and 2017.
How much do we currently get from baseball at PG Park and other things that happen at PG Park? How much of that?
I don't have the breakout of that with me today.
So the spectator fund bonds are $11.2 million, and we currently have $5 million. We get $5 million a year. How much is currently in the spectator fund?
I'm sorry. How much cash is in the spectator fund?
Yeah.
Or
reserves.
Probably about
six. Between operating and capital, call it six.
Six, yeah, so approximately.
So we borrow more and pay it back later to get to this $11.2 million.
The bonds get repaid over 25 years.
Okay. And so, but we currently get some money from baseball at PGE Park. So if soccer fails, what happens to paying off? It's $29 million, the current debt, right?
26, I believe.
26 now. Okay. So how do we then pay off the current debt on PGE Park if soccer fails?
Well, we have the guarantee payments that
for the renovations.
Yeah, and
but does that roll in the current $26 million debt?
No, the $26 million debt would be paid from the VDI, which we currently would receive through the life of the bonds, and then from excess revenues of the Spectator Facilities Fund.
But we wouldn't have as much Spectator Facilities Fund if we don't have baseball or soccer at PGE Park, right?
Then it's guaranteed.
The soccer part's guaranteed, so I think that one is.
Well, I guess I'm questioning: is the baseball paying back the baseball part, the PGE, the Civic Stadium to PGE Park debt? Is that guaranteed?
I'm sorry. Say that again, Commissioner. I'm sorry.
Paying back the $26 million we currently owe, which we pay back with spectator fees and visitors funds. If we don't have as much spectator fees because we don't have soccer or baseball at PGE Park, how do we pay that back?
We would pay it from the Spectator Facilities Fund after net of their VDI revenues. We wouldn't have
as much of that because we wouldn't have either at PG Park.
But the soccer piece, the soccer doesn't add anything to the $26 million. It's paying basically the new set of obligations. Baseball makes some contribution, but But without that, the Spectator Facilities Fund still has sufficient revenues to cover the outstanding indebtedness and any remaining indebtedness at PG Park that's not associated with this transaction.
Okay. So this is obviously a lot better in that the Peregrine and Merritt Paulson are paying $19.1 million and the public is paying $11.9 million, mostly from spectator fees. Where is the $700,000 from the city-assumed soft costs coming from?
That's where we would waive development fees or contribute development fees associated with redevelopment of PG Park.
It's essentially a reduction in project costs.
But essentially we'd have to find some funds from the general fund to pay for the development services folks?
No.
Where would we, how would we pay for, if we're going to waive the project development permit fees, where, how are we going to pay for the people to do the permits?
I wouldn't call it waive, I would call it reduce.
SDCs don't go to pay for people to do the permits, building permit fees do that.
Right. So we're waiving SDCs is part of that?
Right.
So the $0.7 million is waiving SDCs. It's a little difficult. The folks at home are wondering why we're not prepared because we're just finding out this information right now.
This is a airing out of the term sheet.
Right.
Fish?
Oh, I just had a question.
Do you want to follow up on what I was
saying? I want to just make sure I understand the math. I want to give Mr. Paulson all the credit for his side, make sure I understand our side. So he puts $35 million down to buy an MLS franchise, correct?
Correct.
He is proposing to give us a cash payment of $8 million and to capitalize the rent and give us another cash payment of $11.1 million. So that's $54 million. And we're, under this proposal, being asked to contribute $11.2, which is fully secured in years 1 through 7 by a guarantee of Mr. Paulson that there'll be sufficient revenue to cover. They'll be fully guaranteed by him for years 1 through 7. Is that correct? And then there's this soft cost of $750,000. So the city component of this is less than $1 million. And for that, you're saying we can leverage $65 million of contributions, not place the general fund at risk for soccer.
Yes.
Of that $54 million being out of his pocket.
I mean, you could argue or make a characterization that the cap payment is money that the city would otherwise have received and could have financed itself. So is it whose side of the ledger? Is it on his side or our side? But the fact is, by not having to do the financing and have it up front, simplifies the transaction for us.
We can argue that, but like any business, it can fail. Mm-hmm. And so he's paying us up front years 8 to 25 in a business that could very well fail in year 2 or 3.
Correct. Cash is always good.
So thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Clearly, this is a much better deal for the taxpayers. Let me go back to the items on the agenda because I'm interested in the no-bid contract, the exemption to competitive bidding, and the sole source. And given that we have consistently had bids coming in at a third of the price this year that I've been on the council, why are we not putting out the construction contract to competitive bid to see what kinds of proposals we get?
That's one of the reasons we've dropped the project cost from $38 million to $31 million, because I believe, having seen those same numbers, that we're going to see actual costs come in lower than what we originally thought.
So we're banking on those. And Jim Van Dyke, did you want to talk about that?
Yes, I can address the exemption if Commissioner Fritz has a question about that. What we're doing here is exempting this from the state law requirement of competitive bidding. And the legal requirement consists, among other things, of showing that the city will enjoy a substantial cost savings by going with a proposed deal as opposed to putting this out to competitive bidding. Okay. That's ultimately a judgment call for the council to make. Whenever you're in a situation where you're exempting a contract, you're looking at a proposed deal in front of you compared to the hypothetical or theoretical deal you might get if you go through, you know, some sort of bid process. Ultimately, that's a judgment call for the council to make. You are legally sufficient if the council votes to adopt the exemption, it is legally sufficient because you have a substantial cash contribution from a private entity, and it would be unlikely, I think, that you would have any other bidder offering to put $8 million of their own money into the project. If another bidder could bid, say, $8 million less than the proposed $31 million, I suppose that's a possibility.
Well, it's a distinct possibility given the kinds of contracts that have come in over the last 6 months. Yesterday, we had one at two-thirds the original bidding price, and we've had them at as low as a third of the bidding price. So I appreciate that it's gone down from 37 to 31 million. I'm wondering, what are we getting for our 31 million? How much stadium are we paying for? What are the parameters of what we're asking? It's because it's still the $11 million of spectator funds, which could otherwise be used for updating Memorial Coliseum.
Well, can I follow up just on the contracting piece? Because I share a similar concern. If we exempt this contract from our normal rules, what is our guarantee that all of our other contracting rules are followed in terms of minority women, emerging small business participation, and other goals that are set forth in our code?
I can address that a little bit, Commissioner Fish. The pre-development agreement that is also before the council today says that Peregrine must receive approval from the city on its proposed contracts. So, for example, Peregrine's proposed contract with its construction contractor will have to receive city approval. And ultimately, that final development agreement, that proposed contract, will come back for the council to vote on. So you will be in a position to see exactly what's going to happen in regard to minority women and emerging small businesses. Now, I will say that I have informed Peregrine's attorneys of many of the city's requirements, of its typical contracting requirements, and I informed them of the requirement to make good faith efforts to hire minority women and emerging small businesses. And what we've said to them is this will be something that we're going to have to negotiate a little bit because, as you know, typically good faith efforts, which doesn't require hiring any specific particular firm or any particular quota, but requires them to make contacts and have opportunities, comes up a little bit differently in this kind of situation than if you had a competitive bidding situation. But so we'll have to negotiate exactly how that applies in this situation. But we certainly let them know that that's going to be a requirement, that the city is going to be looking at that and expecting them to fulfill their obligations.
Could I ask my colleagues, Commissioner Leonard and Commissioner Adams, just what their parameters are? Because I've been struck. We've done recent ordinances on buy local. We've set some standards on how money from stimulus is to be spent. We've been critical of certain contracts not meeting the mark. So what would be the test for you if this came back to us for approval?
That these exact same processes as outlined by Jim just a moment ago be applied to this project as any other. And that the distinct difference here is we have a private sector partner who has a lot of skin in the game. It is in his best interest to get as much value out of this project as it is ours. And so I'm extremely confident that we're going to get the advantage of the current market conditions. Any favorable conditions that exist in contracting will receive. And I'm also as confident that they will make a good faith effort, just as we do in each of our contracts, to include minority and women-owned businesses at every opportunity.
We wouldn't get that, though.
We wouldn't get what?
The savings. And isn't it $15 million or so going to Turner Construction, which is not a local company? Or is it a local
If
company?
I could answer the question, I would expect that they follow the same aspirational goals for our own bureaus and their contracting as it relates to buy local and as it relates to certified women, minority and emerging small businesses. And when we originally remodeled PG Park, that project exceeded the goals of the city at the time, the aspirations and goals of the city at that time.
So if I can continue, could you tell me why or how the $37 million has gone down to $31 million? What are we getting?
It's $38 million.
$38 million to $31 million. Is it a reduction in the scope of work, or is it a reduction in the construction contract bid?
I believe will be both. But I also think for the $31 million, we're going to realize we can do more of the scope than what we think right now. I think we're going to experience the same dynamic we've witnessed here that you've alluded to when the actual bids go out, and we'll be able to do more within the scope of what we'd ultimately like to see happen than what we think we can get for $31 million.
But we're not putting the bids out.
Well, in this case, we
certainly are. I mean,
we have to come. This is a negotiated contract, and we do this from time to time on projects that have a variety of characteristics. Part of them is Jim's point that unlike the contracts that our bureaus do right now, we don't have a private sector partner who's helping to underwrite the costs of our public works projects. In this particular case, we have a stadium remodeling project which is being underwritten with significant private sector investment, and therefore it will be a negotiated contract with the actual contractors. The negotiations occur, as I understand, Jim, and correct me if I'm wrong, between Merritt Paulson and his Peregrine and his contractors, but that comes back to us for our review.
Yes, Mayor, that comes back to us for the council's review and approval. I just wanted to clarify another point, which is that the city's recent buy local ordinance wouldn't, as you know, that's kind
would
of
not apply.
It doesn't apply to here. So even if you sent this out to a bid, you couldn't require that a local company get the award of the contract because state law doesn't permit that.
I was talking about the trend in terms of values that we've been bringing to the contracting process. I did not mean to imply.
No. I just wanted to clarify that. And so the one other thing that I wanted to mention is I did go back, and although sole source contracts for construction are rare, the city council has done that before, not within the last 6 months that I know of, but I know that when the city did some contract work down on South Waterfront, for example, there were some sole source contracts to Dameson Williams Construction because of some overlapping agreements. For example, PDOT was required to do the streets, and they were doing construction around the streets, and rather than have two contractors stepping all over each other, we let them go ahead and do that.
Other discussion? So sole source does not mean a lack of negotiation or a lack of oversight or trying to get the best deal. It means it's a negotiated contract.
So, for instance, on details such as $2.5 million for a scoreboard and $1.5 million for a party deck and $1.5 for additional unspecified scope items, do we get to review whether we want to buy those or help buy those?
As part of the final contract, yes.
So when does that come to us?
We have to work out. We'll be returning with the timeline for here on out. Having just completed this term sheet within the last hour, we have to come back to council on the details related to the work plan and the timeline for that.
Given that you just got it in the last hour and I got it when we started the hearing, is there a reason that we have to vote on this today? Can we put it over for a week so we can get more?
We are not voting on the term sheet today. This is just an airing out of the term sheet discussions recently concluded. We wanted to make sure that you had
Mayor,
asking the tough questions. Today it's just these items.
My understanding is
and we're not voting today.
We're not voting on any of the matters other than an emergency ordinance to keep our attorney fed.
Thank you.
But the other matters go to a second reading.
Okay.
But I want to remind folks that because of vacations next week, we won't be having the second reading next week either. It'll be 2 weeks today at the earliest.
So I think following up on that.
Or at the latest, 3 weeks, 23rd of July.
Okay. I think I'll beat Amanda the punch on this. There may be some details between now and then that we'll want to understand better, and you've always been very generous with your time and coming in and briefing us, so we may reach out to you just to make sure we understand. And if we have some questions, we'll email you.
And just one last question about baseball. What's the status of baseball in all this?
Well, as you heard, the obligation of the Beavers remaining at PG Park expires in 2010. I have been working to identify alternate sites within the city that they may possibly go to. I don't think I need to remind you how challenging that's been up until now. Merit has committed to work with me in attempting to locate a spot by August 1st. We're diligently daily looking at new spots. I've received just today the suggestion for another place that I'm going to have asked the city to review. In any event, their contract expires at the end of 2010. So unless we as a city can figure out a place for them, he has the option to move them wherever he can take them.
And where do they go? Because construction would start soon, right, for PG Park.
Right.
What do they do next season?
We would schedule the construction around their season.
Any other council discussion? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Carla, do we have anyone signed up for these three ordinance or these three council items?
We have six people who signed up.
Okay.
First three, please come on up, are Drew Mihalik, Chris McGuire, and Randy Miller.
Gentlemen, welcome to the City Council. Glad you're here. I think you're all experienced hands at this process. No, you can't approach us. We're just like, they have to keep us very safe back here behind us. You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll each have 3 minutes, and the clock in front of you helps count down your time. Drew?
Thanks, Mayor Adams. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and fellow commissioners. My name is Drew Mihalik. I reside in Southwest Portland and am the CEO of the Oregon Sports Authority, a nonprofit organization which represents sports-related interests of more than 100 local businesses. Our mission is to help make Portland and Oregon a more renowned sports tourism destination and positively impact our economy and quality of life. Helping to secure a Major League Soccer franchise like MLS is at the core of our mission. We had the pleasure of hosting the very first visit of the MLS commissioner, his visit to PGE Park about 10 years ago, and we're excited to see Portland now truly on the verge of landing its second major pro sports franchise, the first since the Blazers arrived nearly four decades ago. Given what we've seen happen in Seattle with their MLS season ticket holders exceeding that of the Mariners, there is no doubt that Portland's MLS franchise will thrive in our city. We are, and we have always been, a better city than Seattle in terms of soccer.
In terms of everything.
Because of the impending deadlines that we've all heard necessary for our Portland MLS franchise to commence play in the year 2011, we do urge your expedient approval of the pre-development and operating agreements exemption from the competitive bid process, as well as the agreement that we heard today on the financing of the renovation. We recognize that you have all put in a great deal of work into supporting this effort to bring MLS to Portland. We applaud your leadership, your stamina, and we urge your perseverance to swiftly move the process toward the realization of MLS in Portland. It will be a proud legacy for our fine city. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McGuire.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and City Commissioners. My name is Chris McGuire, and I am the head of sports marketing for Adidas America. I'm excited once again to be here in front of each of you to voice Adidas's and my support in bringing Major League Soccer to Portland in 2011. I also want to thank you for your continued support of the Polson family and their dream of bringing the 18th franchise of MLS to our great city. Last Wednesday at PGE Park, we saw what the future holds when the current Timbers team battled the Seattle Sounders in a sold-out and electrified stadium. Hopefully you attended this game as it proved that the people of Portland want an MLS franchise. It was a great spectacle as we saw an intense local rivalry in an atmosphere conducive for all fans, and it showed there's no doubt that bringing MLS to Portland is the right decision. I know I had chills on the back of my neck as I witnessed a glimpse into what the future holds for this city and this club. The result was not in the Timbers' favor, but this showcase of top-flight soccer rallied citizens of this great city in these challenging times, regardless of age, ethnic background, or socioeconomic status. I was also fortunate enough to be asked to sit on the task force and lend my experience to that discussion. I was excited with the outcome the task force chose, and being a fan of nail-biting finishes, enjoyed the dramatic vote that took place here in March at City Council. Since this time, the 14th season of MLS has begun, and we continue to see positive growth from the league and the sport. We are all aware of record-setting start taking place in Seattle and how that team has taken over the city. We're also witnessing the same excitement and anticipation happening in Philadelphia and Vancouver as they begin to lay the groundwork for their franchises. We also saw an unprecedented success with our U.S. national team in an international competition this past June, proving that the U.S. is producing world-class talent and receiving television ratings on ESPN that rivals the other major sports leagues. These successes have generated additional interest from many cities and potential owners around the U.S. to bring MLS to their city, proving that, once again, the decision to bring MLS to Portland in 2007 is the correct decision. I also wanted to reiterate how this opportunity can benefit our city from an Adidas perspective. Adidas has a long-term relationship with Major League Soccer that stretches back to the league's inception in 1996. In September of 2004, we finalized a 10-year, $150 million partnership to become their sole product supplier. We are proud to outfit all 15 current MLS teams and will be especially proud to outfit the Portland franchise in 2011. I know this for a fact because all of the roughly 1,000 employees at our offices in North Portland, they've all asked me for season tickets beginning in 2011. And we continue to be very encouraged with our partnership with the league, and I'm happy to report that it's one of the fastest growing areas of business for the brand. Even as we fight a challenging economic environment, we're seeing solid growth with MLS licensed products and a consumer who has an unwavering passion for their club and the sport. I'm pleased to let you know that this business has exceeded original projections threefold the past 3 years. The MLS single entity structure, salary cap, and controlled spending continues to prove this is a wise, safe investment for Adidas. And this successful business model is one that many of the European soccer leagues are looking to adapt. As you know, by continuing to support Merritt and the Polson family and bringing MLS to Portland, not only will you bring a team to our market in the fastest-growing sports league in the world, but you'll be providing hundreds of new employment opportunities, a self-financing deal, and a direct economic impact on local companies. Although Adidas will benefit from having another franchise in MLS, as a fan of the sport, taxpayer, and resident of the city, there's not a better choice you can make than by continuing your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGuire.
Mr. McGuire, that's the most compelling testimony that I have heard in support of this, particularly given in the discussion we had yesterday as far as the city's economic development strategy and outdoor clothing and footwear being one of the key industries. Yeah. And I really appreciate Adidas being right here in our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry I ran a little long, too.
I enjoyed it.
Okay. Fritz is also wondering whether you would be willing to sponsor her daughter's soccer club.
Well, we can talk about that later.
She doesn't play soccer, sir. Yours does.
Not yet.
My daughter, then.
Mr. Miller.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I will prepare to make my remarks overdue as underage there. I'm Randy Miller. And actually, you know, as I think back over 35 years of civic engagement, I really kind of think I can connect the dots around this town as to what really makes it tick, and particularly as it relates to a lot of the issues which I've worked on, and that is, and I still believe strongly, that a strong economy and family income really helps people develop their ability to tackle some of their, none of their issues, but also address some of the benefits that we have here. And you know me best probably for the job creation and all the economic development stuff I've been doing, but I've been involved with a lot of other organizations too over the years, and I think that what we always need to strive for is balance. And it's balance, what I see out of this issue, and that's why I really support this initiative for MLS. Some of you have been on the best practices trips that I've undertaken for the city over the last 20 years. We've gone all over the country and to Scandinavia last year to see how other cities excel and what makes them tick and what do they achieve that we can explore and bring back here to make this community even work better. And there's one common bond that we see in every one of these places where we go. And that is the community spirit around their sports teams. It doesn't matter who the people are. They're rich, they're poor, they're black, they're white, they're Latino, they're young, they're old. It doesn't matter. They generate community spirit. And we see some of that with the Blazers. And that spirit, I feel, is what this helps with balance in terms of what we can achieve with this. The Oregon Sports Authority has made a valiant effort over the last several years to bring Major League Baseball and hockey as well as football. And I think someday they'll be here. But what is a better fit than this? This soccer is not only going to be the least expensive, but it's also going to be the most compelling for our citizens. And we have the opportunity and the most generous offer I've ever seen by anyone in terms of making this thing work. So connecting all these dots and bringing the balance to this community that I think this will, I just strongly think this is the best we can do. It's Portland, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Thank you all.
I brought you this wonderful article on Portland.
Okay.
The next three are Scott Taylor, Jeremy Wright, and Ian Todd.
Thank you. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome back.
How are you?
Good. I think you know the protocol, so who would like to begin? Ian?
Hello again, commissioners. My name is Ian Todd. I'm a resident of Southwest Portland. I want to address a couple of things that got brought up here with the and I've looked at the finance deals over the last several weeks as we got closer to this. I looked at the finance deals for other sporting franchises in both soccer and other sports in the states. And this new deal that was presented today is the most generous from an owner, the least taxing on, no pun intended, on citizens and taxpayers that I have ever seen. If you look at how much the state of Pennsylvania paid for their franchises starting next year compared to this, the fact that this thing guarantees us revenue out of that facility, whereas if we don't go forward with this, the tumbleweeds could be there and the city would be on the hook without this. The soccer also, and I want to go big picture because the Timbers are going to fill that place, but it's also with a soccer-specific stadium, it's a benefit to Portland State University and the effort to possibly go up to Division I football and join the WAC or the Mountain West and the expansion. And I addressed that when we had the severing vote, that brings in additional attention to the city and the university. And that has been one of the missions that has been talked about in Portland for the last number of years, is increasing the profile nationally of Portland State University and truly being an international university. Also, we have the opportunity right now. There is Gold Cup matches going on in, I think, 12 or 14 other cities that with a soccer-specific stadium, we would have the opportunity to host. There are Superliga and CONCACAF Champions League matches that is additional revenue that's not league revenue. There's World Cup qualifiers. There is the, I think it's called the World Club competition that's going on that is happening in 12 cities around the country this summer that are going to be sellouts at stadiums like Seattle and Rio Tinto and Salt Lake. That's additional revenue stream. The ticket tax off that goes into that fund. It's a way for us to capitalize an asset that is city-owned that we have a private investor willing to spend his money improving, which can only help the city and move us down the road. And then also the message that when someone gives a good deal to this city will follow through on their end and is welcoming to those things. And it's a positive business message. It's a positive community message. It raises the profile. The amount of world and U.S. press on that Seattle match was unprecedented and will only help going forward. And I urge you to pass the three resolutions in front of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sir?
Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor. My name is Scott Taylor. I don't have a whole lot of facts and data to support my opinion, but just my opinion. I'm a guy that moved here 14 years ago from New York. I started a company. I was an employer of about 200-plus employees here during the internet time. Sold that company, returned some money back to our investors, and started a new company called Tau Productions. It's a small company in Portland, in the city. We're involved in sporting events, productions. I'm a season ticket holder for the Blazers. I'm on the Oregon Sports Authority board, and just a fan of soccer. So one of some of the things I want to talk about today are kind of plain, but hopefully you'll get the idea. One, I was here to produce soccer event for the World Cup event in Pioneer Square. I don't know if any of you attended or saw that in the newspaper some years ago. But at the time, people asked Drew and I if anybody would be interested in soccer. Could we really fill Pioneer Square? And there were some doubters. And I think at the end, it was one of the most well-attended events in Pioneer Square. And it was really great to see people from all walks of life, shoulder by shoulder in the sun in Portland, which was new, enjoying soccer. I work with companies like Red Bull. I work with Nike. I work with Adidas, companies that have shown a wide support for the soccer. Red Bull is now building a stadium in New York after acquiring the Red Bulls. I think that the economic impact of MLS soccer in Portland is obvious to the average person. They know the excitement it brings. They know the amount of people it brings to the city. I think that watching the Blazers go through the struggles of trying to build a team and the fans kind of waffle was disappointing. I ended up taking out an ad in the Oregonian back when people were throwing the Blazers under the bus, and I watched people in the city turn around and make their thoughts known, where they wanted a team to represent Portland, some team that people could be proud of. And I think that the owner of the Blazers and the people that are working have given us a team that we can be proud of. It's only one team, and I'm amazed to look back at some of the cities around the country that have multiple sports teams. I'd love to see Portland have soccer, and I think it makes sense. Economically, it makes sense. You can tell by the data that's shown. But the soul of Portland, I think, surrounds soccer, and I think soccer would be an amazing addition to our fine town. And from what I've heard today, there are a lot of proponents, and I think that you guys will make the right decisions on how it gets put together. But I want to thank the Paulson family for coming into Portland and making a big commitment. I know it's not easy to raise money like that on our own. So that's my two cents, and I appreciate your time. And let's make sure we don't miss out on this great opportunity as a city. Thank you.
Sir. Thank you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Jeremy Wright, represent MLS to PDX, and speaking as a citizen of Portland. I want to talk a little bit about did any of you get a chance to make to the matches on Wednesday or Thursday?
I went Thursday.
Okay, so you got a chance to see the 9,000.
I didn't actually have a great chance because Merritt was standing in front of my row the whole time.
Okay, got it. But if you had a chance, obviously people have talked a lot about the spectacle of what happened Wednesday night with the Sounders game, but it also exposed, I think, why we need to make this happen. You know, they had to stop the sellout at 16,500 seats. One of the reasons is if you've been in that stadium, if there's more than 12,000, 13,000 people, it becomes quite uncomfortable. The concourses are too narrow. There's not enough bathrooms, et cetera, et cetera. So while it was an amazing spectacle on Wednesday night, it also exposed why we need to make this into a world-class soccer facility and why we need to make it into a stadium that can fit comfortably that many fans who are going to be coming every single game. We're going to get 16, 20, 25,000 a game, and that was proven last Wednesday night. And so this stadium is about making things, this proposal in renovating PG Park, it's about making a spectacle like we saw Wednesday night comfortable for all fans and comfortable and safe. I also want to talk a little bit about priorities. Reading through, listening to how this proposal is laid out today, the way I read it, it looks like the greatest exposure we have is for about $1 million if there's a cost overrun. What does $1 million mean in our overall budget? I think almost $1 million was spent in public funding for the races for Commissioner Fritz's races. $1 million represents how much of the total budget? This is a very, very small amount. This is something that can we can protect ourselves, and this is something that protects the taxpayers of Portland, and is a great deal and something we cannot pass up. So I urge you to vote yes, and thank you very much.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it, gentlemen.
Thank Here, you. I had two other questions, if I could.
One more.
One more to testify,
Merritt Paulson.
And then we'll get to your question. Mr. Paulson. And Mr. Peden. Welcome. Security. Welcome to the City Council. All we need is your first and last name, and you have 3 minutes, but you might be asked a question.
Well, thank you. Merritt Paulson. I have no prepared remarks. I would just thank each and every one of you for your time and effort in reviewing this proposal. I think it's a great proposal for the City of Portland. It's a very fair proposal. It follows the task force recommendations, and I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to move forward here. Happy to answer any questions.
So I had two questions, and maybe either to Merritt or maybe to Randy, but the PGE naming rights are up again next year, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So if Major League Soccer is a huge success and there's a chance to rename, how does that work under this proposed deal?
I'm going to let, this is something Merritt's discussed with us quite a bit. Go ahead.
We'll either renew our current deal with PGE or do a new naming rights deal.
And would we have any role in that, and is there any upside to us if someone chooses to wildly overpay for the naming rights?
No. But be my guest and try to do a naming rights deal in this town. I'm sure the Blazers would be happy.
And the second question I have is, Merritt, when I saw you at the game with between the Timbers and the German team, and I will note that our second team beat their team, which was quite a feat. I asked you, I was with a couple of people, and I asked you, what are the chances we'd ever land a women's professional team? And that actually, I think the next day I read, there was a story in the paper about how